Hi folks, and thanks for listening to this Echo Chamber podcast. A couple of important things before we kick off. First of all, I want to mention we are now working with Dignity for Palestine. If you listen to the most recent podcast, you'd have heard Dr. Mosala talk about the work that they are doing with people who are incredibly vulnerable in the most difficult of circumstances and how they need help. So we are going to partner with them. We're getting great support from Adam Spicebag Doyle, but we're calling on you. If you want to help us, the details are on the bottom of the podcast you're listening to right now. And then secondly, the Tortoise Shack really needs your support. We are really struggling. I won't lie, it's been very disheartening. We've a lot of new listeners. We've a lot of people supporting, obviously, the work we've done in terms of Gaza. But we're finding it very, very hard to keep the lights on and mics on because there's less people chipping in. I understand people are finding it hard out there. But we don't have ads and we don't have sponsors and we've no trust fund in the background. We rely entirely on you. So we need your help. It's really simple. Please click the link. It says patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It is the easiest bit of activism you can do on a monthly basis. Finally, I want to say a big thank you to my co-host, Martin McMahon, for all the work he continues to do for the workers out there. And it's because of those workers that we are releasing this podcast in full now. I'm pretty sure we only put out the first 10 minutes of the last time, but we had such a reaction from members of staff from On Post and indeed from the postmasters themselves that we decided we better pull it out in full. So here it is, unvarnished, unedited, the On Post post office scandal.
It's almost 2 weeks since we here on the Echo Chamber podcast first broke the story about bogus self-employment in On Post and how postmasters are bogus self-employed. Since then, I've been inundated with phone calls from postmasters wanting to know the full details of what we have uncovered. Again, there's a lot of trepidation amongst postmasters. They're very untrusting of On Post. So we will be arranging some kind of online forum where people can keep their identity anonymous and we can discuss and expose what we have learned.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and folks, we have another scoop for you. It's been a while coming. Listeners, members would probably be keen to have heard this because they know it was coming because we've kind of teased it for a little while and we've been working on it and Martin has been particularly dedicated in supporting, as he always does, workers. And we have some news. But before we go to that news, I just want to actually say how funny it is that the whistleblower Shane Corr, who listeners will remember, is the man who blew the whistle about the dodgy dealings being done by the HSE and what was going on and troubles for Robert Watt and how the state was effectively spying on families with children with autism and certain other many other things. Shane Corr, of all people, called Martin Ireland's Mr. Bates. And, I kind of threw up a little bit in my mouth when he did it, but there's a little bit of truth in it, and I can tell you when you hear this story, you'll actually see there's the Venn diagram is a circle. So Martin, let's bring people in on what's going on. It's not just RTE.
No, bogus self-employment is not just RTE, and there are more serious areas than RTE where bogus self-employment is being abused, and one of them I've been working with postmasters in the recent past, and they came to me off the back of the work I'd been doing with RTE, with the RTE employees, and they said to me that they had spoken to their union several times over the years about their employment status. And my first question was, do you get a payslip? And they said, yeah. I said, very good chance that you guys are all employees. So I had 10 of them wrote sample letters to the scope section. I've explained before what the scope section is. And
if you haven't heard, the scope section is going to make a determination of their employment status. And we've seen in the case of RTE that the scope section has been universally overturning some decisions that were made with RTE. Go ahead, Martin. Sorry.
Yeah, scope section generally does what it says on the tin. It provides an insurability of employment decision, which is legally binding. That's what it does. So, 10 letters in, within 48 hours, there was a response to the 10 letters. And what it said was, according to the Department of Social Welfare, you were employees. According to the Revenue Commissioners, you are not employees. You are self-employed. So the guys knew then legally they were in a situation where there's something awful going on. So they did a lot of work, did a lot of background work. And the basis of the scope section decision is that these guys are not in business of their own account. They simply cannot be. They have no idea how much they're earning. They have no idea what their profit and loss is. They're just simply not in business. It's tokenism.
Can you repeat that again? They have no idea what they're earning.
None.
How?
None.
How?
Because it's OnPost's IT system decides what they're earning and they're not privy to it. They get pay slips. They get tax deducted at source. It's such a hodgepodge of a system. And that's how they are classified as self-employed by revenue, yet employees by the Department of Social Welfare. And it's absolutely nonsense.
But these are, like, I mean, you know how close I am to my local post office. You know, I'm on first name terms with my local postmaster. Needless to say, I'll give you a laugh, folks. The other day when we were selling the scarves for Spice Bag, the local postmaster said, "Can I have a look at one of them?" And this is to show you the decency of the man. And I'm sure this is replicated in post offices across the country. He said to me, "Look, can I just look?" He says, "I'll just throw you the donation anyway." And that was the type of guy we're talking about here, Martin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. These are, look, you know, when you're dealing with workers, Tony, and we've seen this in RT, they're the best of people. They're the best of people. And postmasters are no different. They are the best of people. I actually found out in all of this that I have a grand-aunt in Connacht somewhere who is a postmistress and a doyen of the village. You know, everything circulates around her and has been for 40 odd years. And when I heard this, I was disgusted, utterly disgusted.
So let's, I'm going to let people know that we will. They have given us exclusively a statement that they've made, a comprehensive statement, and we will read it into the record now shortly. But before we do that, Martin, tell me what the lay of the land is for postmasters right now as they look at what's happening in RTE. They look at what's happened in the UK scandal and how it's been treated. Where did this stand, and what are the similarities between say employees or employees who were treated as bogus self-employment in say RTE and indeed postmasters in the UK?
Oh, it's the same thing that's happening to RT workers as has happened to postmasters and other workers. As you know, Tony, I'm working on other workers, and this will all be coming out in time. But I thought what was happening to the postmasters was particularly bad. I thought what they did to them, as you'll hear in January, was particularly bad. It's the same deal. The courts have been making legal decisions on how to determine employment status for, you know, since the beginning of time, and revenue and the Department of Social Welfare have just been ignoring the courts. And this is what's been going on until the Carshan decision came out last year.
And we said this at the time. We go back and listen to the conversation, Martin. You had Professor Stephen Kinsella on, and you were able to point out, he actually defers to you in this. He says, "Well, you're the expert on this, Martin." And he talked about it in terms of, and Stephen is a really, you know, we've a lot of time for Stephen on this podcast. He's always been very good with his time, but he deferred to Martin on what the Carshan case meant. And you pointed out at the time, Martin, that the reason the Carshan case was important was not for Carshan. It was because Revenue and the Department of Social Welfare wanted the status quo to be upheld, and they simply and the justice system said no.
It's the Supreme Court was never going to turn over the principles in the 1997 Denny case. It was never going to happen, no matter what the Court of Appeal said. The Supreme Court is the Supreme Court, and Revenue have issued a statement and put out warnings to contractors to say that it's a sea change. It's a sea change. But nothing is changing. They have no intention of changing what they're doing. And not only is it a sea change, the Department of Social Welfare was admonished by the Supreme Court, admonished, and has denied it in the Doyle. Now, it's utterly ridiculous, the cover-up that's going on. But I think when we hear what's happening to post office workers, people will begin to realise that Revenue and the Department of Social Welfare have been acting unlawfully for decades. RTE is just one of these. On Post is another. There are loads more.
We will go to the statement now shortly, but I will say On Post has benefited greatly from the strength of the postmasters in people's local communities. And I'm sure people will be actually horrified to feel that the guy that they rely on, or the woman that they rely on, has been treated so fucking appallingly. That's the truth.
It is appalling, Tony. And look, I've spoken to people that were in this job since 16 years of age. A lifetime given to On Post. A lifetime.
Yeah, no, Martin, will you kindly enter the statement into the record for us?
I will do, Tony. Since last year, and in particular the new year, with the broadcast of a TV documentary, we have been enthralled with the scandal at the post office in the UK. The treatment of postmasters by a bullish corporation was shocking to see. The alarming thing is, all is not well with our own post office in Ireland. Similar to the UK, Irish postmasters are considered self-employed contractors. They run the majority of post offices in Ireland, and very few company offices are left. These will soon be tendered out for private contract. What most people don't realise is that postmasters receive a commission-based payment, and out of this, the postmaster is liable for all costs. These include staff costs, rent, insurance, electricity, and local rates. This leaves a meagre living to be made from operating a post office. On top of this, postmasters and their staff are at the direction of On Post at all times. Self-employed contractors only in name. Postmasters cannot choose their hours, what products they sell, or indeed how much they charge for their service. This is all directed by On Post, and it is how postmasters are paid that's causing the issue. Pay structure. Postmasters are paid by commission. This means they get a percentage of the product services they sell. Despite On Post increasing the price of stamps several times over the past 10 years, postmasters have received no such percentage increase. The rates paid are set by On Post and non-negotiable. Each month, postmasters receive a salary. The way this salary is calculated is a convoluted system, again at On Post's discretion. This is basically an estimated figure of what On Post expects a postmaster to earn. This is based on business generated in the same quarter last year, general trends across the network, and allows for deduction or addition of any overpayment, underpayment made in the previous quarter. A postmaster has no idea what will actually hit their bank account on the first month of a quarter, and will only be given a breakdown of what figure on the second week of the second month of a quarter. The most worrying aspect to this is that postmasters have no way to independently verify what On Post says their office generated in business commission. There is no way for a postmaster to either influence profit or mitigate against loss. What has occurred now a number of times, but most evident in January of this year, when a large number of postmasters received letters advising that due to an error by On Post, they had been overpaid, and as such, a deduction was coming in February. This varied in amount from a few hundred euro to over 7,000 euro in one case. Some postmasters had to resort to getting credit union loans to cover that month's expenses. This type of behaviour has been allowed to carry on for too long. Postmasters are essentially at the mercy of the company, and this has been the final straw. IT issues. Postmasters are using an On Post IT system that you routinely crash several times, which can result in transactions not going through. If this is not immediately identified by a postmaster and rectified, any loss occurring as a result has to be repaid by the postmaster, even though it is neither the fault nor within the control of the postmaster. There have been frequent reports of offices being over or short with no explanation. On Post have been at pains to point out that nothing similar to the UK's Horizon issues have happened here, yet each postmaster can see a list of users linked to their office IT system who have never been approved by the postmaster or even set foot within their post office. Who are these people and why do they need access? If an unexplained error occurs, which can happen given the nature of the IT issues explained above, there is a team called the investigation branch. These are heavy-handed workers for OnPost that have come down, removed PMs from their offices and escorted them to nearby hotels where they will question them in a similar fashion highlighted in the UK. It's carried out like a police interrogation with no support or protection offered for the postmaster. The result is a frightening encounter for the postmaster, and the threat of the investigation branch is used to keep postmasters in line. This practice is not only unacceptable, but most likely illegal. Profits. The rates of commission are set by OnPost. They are non-negotiable, and postmasters have no way to know if they are fair or otherwise. OnPost will claim these are commercially sensitive and as such don't need to divulge what exactly they are earning themselves. An example of this being the recent tender by An Garda Síochána O'Connor, who stated this tender for collection of fines was worth 5.1 million euros over 5 years, or roughly a million per year, based on their own estimates of 166,000 fines per year. This equates to roughly 6.25 euro per fine collected. Postmasters are paid 75 cents. This level of exploitation is not just confined to Garda fines. Recently, Bank of Ireland and AIB revealed profits of almost 2 billion each. These banks removed cash from their branches. OnPost took over this service, allowing customers to use the cash facilities within their local post office. OnPost again stated it would be commercially sensitive to state what they receive from these banks. While the cost savings of providing cash has led to astronomical profits for these banks, postmasters are carrying out these transactions for cents. OnPost advertised that this service is available 6 days a week in post offices, which means postmasters have to open 6 days a week, incur the costs associated with same, and all while being paid a pittance while OnPost and the banks profit. It is blatant exploitation and a win-win for OnPost. Postmasters are on the line for everything. OnPost have no risk whatsoever. They can pay what they like, pressurize postmasters to do their will, hit them for losses if they occur. The government only recently announced how important cash needs to be in communities and committed to keeping same. This is important to vulnerable people. Post offices need to remain open to survive, but this will disappear from towns and villages if this exploitation of postmasters continues. Punitive. Postmasters are never off duty. If an alarm activates, they must attend. If they are on holidays and something goes wrong, postmasters are responsible, even if they are not there. They can never fully relax, and none of this is reflected in the salary, of course. They are responsible for cleaning the office, maintaining the office, and these are inspected as part of a mystery shop. If a customer complains, a full report must be provided by the postmaster, regardless of how trivial. This punitive approach is evident in the procedures manual, which is 3 volumes long and thousands of pages long. If a mistake is made, postmasters are responsible and will be told they should have referred to the procedures guide. Social welfare is by far the biggest contract OnPost has. For this, postmasters are paid a fee per payment made to welfare customers. This figure is just cents. For this, postmasters must pay clients 6 days a week and be fully responsible for each payment made. There is no backup support, so postmasters and their staff are subject to abuse from customers if welfare hasn't paid them. If, for example, a customer has passed away and a postmaster pays out to their agent unknowing the death has occurred, social welfare will hold the postmaster responsible regardless. OnPost doesn't incur any risk and ensures postmasters are held to account. This includes Saturdays when welfare offices aren't even open for customers to query their payment. Postmasters and their staff have themselves helped combat welfare fraud by refusing to make payments where there are suspicious circumstances. No payment is made for this service. This saves the state an absolute fortune every year, well over $23 billion in social welfare bill, but it's the result of exploited postmasters. In March, a letter was received outlining postmasters will now face a penalty of €500 if they mispay a welfare recipient. Again, welfare on and on a post make sure it is the postmaster who is responsible and exploited in this way. It is always the postmaster who is on the hook. Cost cutting. OnPost recently removed their head office from the GPO to the IFSC in a cost cutting exercise. This meant reducing staff numbers, but also allowed OnPost staff to continue to work from home. The workload these staff used to carry is now given to postmasters to complete. New accounts and money laundering tasks, which originally carried out by head office staff, is now carried out by postmasters. This comes with no remuneration and was introduced in a stealthy way by OnPost so no one would notice the extra workload. The company then hides behind regulations to say these tasks must be done. The recent closures of OnPost office demonstrates the savings OnPost can make by exploiting postmasters. They are offering a private tender contract for the remaining company offices, and the rate offered is approximately a third of what it would cost OnPost to run them. They're quite happy to spend state funds on their own offices and people, but not when they can exploit postmasters to do the work for far, far less and offer no such remuneration. Reputation. OnPost benefits from a great trusted reputation. It appears to the ordinary person that post offices are state-owned and operated by civil servants. But this is not the case. Postmasters are on the hook for everything. Staff, rent, rates. This suits the company as they have a great setup. They get the benefits of all the work being done, a good reputation, tell postmasters what they think they'll earn with no recognition and reduce staff costs. They don't have to pay postmasters like employees with pensions and illness, etc., but get the benefit of the work done as employees. This reputation was further enhanced during COVID, when post offices remained open, fully keeping services going and ensuring no disruption to customers. OnPost HQ staff worked from home. For their efforts during COVID, OnPost got a €350 voucher. Postmasters and their staff got nothing. In fact, it was a struggle to even get PPI at times. Postmasters were put under pressure if their office had to close due to staff being ill. All the while, it was postmasters that maintained the company's reputation during this period. It shows the utter contempt OnPost has for postmasters. Postmasters. Postmasters work hard in their communities and are a vital asset. They've had enough of being exploited, and the appalling way they were treated in January was the final straw. It cannot continue to be a fact that such exploitation goes unnoticed. End.
Martin, that's horrendous. That's like...
It is. It just is, Tony.
Can I have a run at this for a second? Like, we're talking about people being treated appallingly, being told that, you know, you're like, I'm gonna put it to you straight. Like, so, you know, just the bank thing really pissed me off. The bank's going cashless. So they don't have to handle. So that means less fees. That means less little piddling transactions. That means less costs because you don't have to have as much security. You don't have to pay for as much security. If you're not handling cash, you can phase out all of those costs that you have, and then you put all of that and you dump it on postmasters who are getting nothing for it while banks are making record profits. And I know, Martin, I know that's only a small thing and this is personal to me because I know what that means. I know the idea that they've used regulations now of paperwork that needs to be completed, money laundering paperwork. That's the type of stuff, you know, like banks were getting away with saying, well, we only open accounts on Mondays between 10 and half 10 and, yeah, and Thursday on the fourth Thursday of every month if you bark like a dog. And they're dumping all of that on postmasters, all of this additional work. That's before we even get into the fact that someone is making a shitload of money here. An absolute fortune.
So people have, and as the post office on Post has told these postmasters, oh, no, no, this is nothing like the Horizon UK scandal. It is exactly like the Horizon UK scandal, except that on Post are craftier whores than the post office in the UK. And instead of taking them to court for the money, they're just bogus self-employed.
Yeah.
And they take the money out of their wages. And eventually these guys have to shut down because they end up taking credit union loans to pay off the losses that aren't theirs in the first place.
Shocking, isn't
it? It's utterly shocking. It's worse than the UK post office scandal. Worse.
And when you put, think about this. Like, again, bring it into the public domain. Everybody's so low. We don't want a cashless society. We need people who have access to cash. You're putting this all on the postmasters and you're making them carry the can for it. You know, the fact that, you know, we're finding out that the profitability in such some of these issues, and they're going to turn around, they're going to use lines like, well, that's commercially sensitive.
Oh, commercially sensitive.
Bollocks.
Yeah, like the profit and loss that a postmaster makes is commercially sensitive. Yet that postmaster is meant to be a viable in business of their own account. It's the most ridiculous, corrupt nonsense.
And you're self-employed. You're responsible for all of this. Yet we have people who can log into your system at any time. What the fuck is that about? Like,
it's a whole mystery of how these guys are paid. It's a complete, they've tried to get to the bottom of it. When they have to put in returns, even though they get pay slips, honestly, they have to put in returns. Now, this happened to other people in other industries as well. Trust me, this is rampant across the place. But they get pay slips and they have to put in returns. And their accountant looks at them every year and goes, what the fuck do I do with this? Seriously, what the fuck? Now, the revenue commissioners have been accepting this since 1979. Yeah,
let's talk about this 1979 ruling. Come on.
Okay, 1979 was the breakup of Post and Telegraphs. That's when it happened. So that's when this deal was done to label them as self-employed. Now, who the deal was between, who was involved, that's not particularly laid out in this agreement. This agreement is in the revenue commissioners issued tax briefings on a monthly basis. This was just thrown in a tax briefing in 1979. But this was a group and class test case, which is illegal. And they knew it was. Not only did they know it was illegal, they knew exactly what they were doing in it. These guys were never in business of their own account, ever. What they did was de-risk on Post's business.
I'm just gonna give you the old example, folks. So think about how the bank bailout worked. So banks walk in and push all their chips on black, and the roulette table goes and they lose, and they go, here, Martin, give us your chips there, will you? And then they put everything on black again, and black comes up, and they say, geez, we're in the money, and they walk away, and you're left standing there. But what about my money back? Yeah, shouldn't have given it to me. And these people have been treated, but like when you say de-risked, I've actually written that down. When no risk for on Post, de-risk for on Post. It's absolutely phenomenal. What a business model. What a business. Because,
oh my God, because, what a business model.
Because you're actually preying on people's goodwill as well. Because the postmaster in the local area is someone, as they said in the statement, they're never off work. They're known. The elderly people.
They can't. I mean, they don't fit any of the criteria to be self-employed, and it's, you know, they're not in business of their own account. They can't subcontract the work. You can't just run a post office and say, oh, that's great, I'll go run another one now. No, you can't subcontract the work. You're not allowed. Now, you can, some guys are doing this. You know how they get the offices? This is gas. All right, they say to the postmaster, you have an allowance of 25 grand for an office. Okay, so go find it. Now you try find an office for 25 grand, rental of 25 grand a year. You know how limiting that is, Tony. Now, you can pick an office and you can say, I have this one. On Post comes out and expects it, says, no, don't want this one, pick another. Now, who has the control?
Yeah, that is literally the definition of you are not self-employed if that's the case. You know, if the criteria was, you know, 120 square meters and I got you a building that's 120 square meters. It shouldn't matter if the walls are orange. You know what I mean?
Or if you run a cafe alongside it, or if you have a beautician's above it, none of this. But there, as they said, this manual is fucking, and it's this manual. I mean, it's only an employee's manual. It couldn't be anything else.
Exactly. That's my point. This is the fear. People say it's in the manual. None of that is ever legally enforceable. I mean,
No. And not only is it not legally enforceable, Revenue and Social Welfare and the unions and the WRC all fucking signed up to this, that statements in written contracts are not legally enforceable. Hmm. They're just fucking not. They may express the wishes of the parties concerned, but they're not legally enforceable. They all signed up to that, have been signed up to it for over 20 goddamn years. And here's the problem. The Supreme Court and the High Court make rulings every now and again. And when the Carshan case came out, Revenue had to issue this statement, because the Carshan is such a kick in the arse for them all, really and truly, and say, this is a sea change. It was a sea change in 1997, too, with the Denny case. But Revenue didn't issue the same statement. They should have.
Mm.
But they sat down with unions, and they sat down with Social Welfare, and they sat down with IBEC, and they sat down with ICTU, and they said, look, we'll make these guidelines voluntary.
Hmm.
But, you know, if you don't want to use this, don't use them. And what they said is, the status quo should remain. And there were the words they used. They're the words they're
on. Who used those words, Martin, if you don't mind me? Can we be?
Revenue and IBEC.
Well.
So they knew in 1997... that they should update all of these things that they had been doing for donkey's years. But they literally stuck two fingers up at the courts and said, fuck you, we'll keep doing what we do because we've always done it this way. And here's the problem. They've always done it this way. It's so inured in the system, they can't see how wrong it is. They don't want to admit because the cost is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Oh, no, and I don't even, like, I mean, I can't understand. Like how this is, I suppose I can understand, I can totally understand how it's gotten to this and how this is where we are. But here we are yet again with another example of one of the pillars of your community absolutely being run into the ground, all for profit of, and then that they won't even, you know.
It's so sneaky.
Yeah.
It's so underhanded. And the good punch for me about all of this, Tony, and I keep saying it, the good punch for me, is that Revenue and Social Welfare have been working against the early risers for over 40 years.
Yeah.
Against them, robbing their pensions. It's awful.
Yeah, we've been all told there's a pensions time bomb. We've all been told.
It's not. It's and I've said this so many times, it's not a pensions time bomb. It's a failure to collect employers' PRSI time bomb, and we're being told we have to pay for it. Well, there's no statute of limitations. Go get what you fucking owed.
Yeah, go get your money. I think we should, we will have to revisit this and thank you.
Oh, Tony, this will be a series, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a series on its own. But I will say thank you to you for helping and assisting with the Postmasters. I understand they are reticent to use their own voices at the moment, but hopefully those hurdles can be overcome in the next little while and we will go from there and continue to cover this. But you're going to read about this next week. No doubt you're going to read about this next week.
Oh, yeah. But, I think you could read about this in any newspaper in the world next week, Tony.
Yeah, but just remember who broke it and who actually helped make it, bring it to the public light.
This is it now. I want people's support for these guys. Let's not have on Puss come cracking down on them like they've done in RT. Let's not have that happen.
Yeah, we need to avoid the fact whereby there's a fear factor, and there is a fear factor.
Well, the state needs to stop supporting these employers. It needs to stop breaking the rules, and it is, and we'll get to that in the next podcast.
We will indeed. Listen, thanks for listening, folks. Thanks for the support. Thanks to our members, because it's only because we have a handful of you helping us keep the mics on and able to do the work that we do. Well done, Baldy. You've absolutely smashed it with this one. Talk to you soon, folks.
Yeah. Well, let's just help the guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. subscribe.